Happy Tuesday after Canadian Thanksgiving. It was IEDC week, and now it is EDAC week. I think it's EDAC or EDCO. You guys will correct me in a minute. My name is Dan Taylor, and this is the ECDev Network with the awesome Lara Fritz and the equally awesome Bob Minhas, and one of our favorite guests, Will George. I do economic development for the town of Innisfil as their economic development catalyst, and I am also a strategic advisor and guide to those in the profession, which basically means I help people do a better job, increase their personal and professional performance, and most importantly, actually help them get tangible economic development results. I am walking the streets outside because it's so gorgeous, so apologize if there's background noise. Bob, over to you.
Dan, thank you as always for those amazing, amazing introductions. Hello, everybody. I'm Bob Minhas. I'm one of the co-hosts for today. You are in the Economic Development ECDev Network on Clubhouse, and we are so glad that you are here today. Again, I'm Bob Minhas. My co-host today is Dan Taylor and Lara Fritz. I'm going to turn it over to Lara in a minute for her to introduce herself, and then, of course, to Will, who is our guest speaker for today. But before I do, I always love to start the room with just some housekeeping to make sure that everyone is on the same page and that we all get the best experience. So for those who aren't familiar, you're in the ECDev Network. You'll see on the very top of the screen where it says Economic Development, there's a little greenhouse. If you click it, that'll allow you to follow us and be notified when we run future events. We generally run events on Wednesdays and Fridays. This week is a special week with the EDAC conference happening in Canada. And so, of course, we are aiming to run a session every day this week, except yesterday, as Dan mentioned, we are all gobbled out for Monday. So here we are back on Tuesday to get started. So click that house to stay in touch with future events as well that are happening all this week, as well as continuous events for next week. As I said, I'm Bob Minhas, and I help communities cultivate digital entrepreneurship through digital business startup and adaption programming for the local business community. Our guest today is Will George. Will is going to talk to us about what we really need to consider when it comes to tourism recovery. Now, if you've been to our rooms before, we always start with a topic, but it really can go anywhere because we really love encouraging all of you in the room to help us drive and lead this conversation. So don't be afraid to open your mics and share. For our friends in the audience, welcome Lee, welcome Carrie, and welcome Cassandra. We haven't met yet. Carrie and Lee, I've sent you invites to join us on the stage if you'd like to join us there. For our other friends who are just joining us in the audience, you'll notice on the bottom of your screen, you'll see an icon that looks like a hand over a notepad. If you click on that, that'll allow you to raise your hand, and that'll allow myself, Dan, or Lara to invite you to join us on stage and contribute to the conversation as well. Welcome M. Fawn for joining us as well. You'll also see a plus icon. All of us here, whether on stage or in the audience, will see that icon. That allows you to ping to invite people to join into this conversation. So if you have a friend, a colleague, an associate, even your mother-in-law, we don't judge here, who you think needs to learn and participate in this conversation around tourism recovery, please click that plus icon, invite them. We love to drive conversation, and the more people, the merrier. That being said, when you are on stage, keep in mind, if you are going to share, we'd love to hear you share. Just make sure that when your mic goes on and you share, at the end, you sign off. For example, this is Bob and I'm done speaking. And that'll allow any other speakers who want to speak to know that they can contribute. But it's also a really cool accessibility feature being used by other tools where people access Clubhouse on. As I look, that seems to be all I wanted to share. So let me throw it over to Lara. Lara, we'd love for you to introduce yourself. And then please hand it over back, and I'll start with Will.
Well, thank you so much, Bob. And wow, I love this enthusiastic introduction today. I think it's because you all had yesterday off to celebrate Thanksgiving. You're ready to take on today.
I am full of pumpkin pie. I'm not going to lie to you, pecan. I'm fighting carbs to make this work today.
I love it. Well, I'm Lara Fritz, and I am a community vitality champion. I work for a company called Aspira USA, where we assist companies in starting and growing their businesses with a particular focus on women and BIPOC entrepreneurs. With that, Bob, I'm going to turn it back to you.
Thank you, Lara. Thank you. And for those of you who are new to the room, we're so glad to have you here. Please know it did take us a good 6 months to develop this pattern. There were times when we were stumbling over ourselves. So we're so glad to have you here, and you can now hear it at our best. So With that, let's get started with the topic of tourism recovery. My guest today, or our guest today, is Will George. Will serves, actually, I'm going to let Will introduce himself because I know he's made a career change and I don't want to get it wrong. Will, please feel free to introduce yourself and let's get the conversation started.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Laura. Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Dan, for hosting these regular Clubhouse calls. It's excellent. They've grown to a global network for us economic development professionals, and it's great to have these conversations. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. I will be speaking on tourism recovery, and it's quite exciting. I'm speaking with a British Columbia, Canada lens, but of course, our conversations will look at our neighbors to the south in the US here and around the globe as well as we talk about some of these best practices, some of these examples, what the tourism industry looked like pre-COVID, and what the future might hold here. As I mentioned, I am a tourism and economic development professional in British Columbia, Canada, a board member of the BC Economic Development Association, and my areas of focus include tourism product development, tourism stakeholder engagement, and placemaking, along with community development. Just a fun tip, I mentioned this during a previous Clubhouse call, I am taking a trip across Canada next year, just a personal vacation along the way, doing a road trip from coast to coast, looking at some of these best case scenarios that we've talked here on the Clubhouse call, best case studies of economic development initiatives, tourism product development and placemaking, and really excited to see the whole country here and looking at how our country delivers tourism services, bricks and mortar locations, and some of these exciting mobile visitor services that I'm sure we'll get into this afternoon here. So jumping right into the conversation, looking at economic recovery for the tourism industry. So as I mentioned, I'll be looking at the BC lens of this and looking at the support that some organizations have provided to the tourism sector. Locally here, we have some local organizations in BC, regional, provincial, that provide that support. And I'm sure whether you're tuning in from the US or across the globe, there are those that have provided the tourism businesses with some grants and with some support. So when we look at the tourism sector, it's not just those businesses that are working to support their workers and working to support the industry, but it's a whole network of organizations and individuals that are supporting this industry. And I think the first thing that I'd like to dive into is really how COVID demonstrated a shortage of outdoor recreation supplies, the desire for spaces for people to be a tourist in their own town, and the prioritization of the spacious outdoor recreation experiences. Laura, Dan, Bob, and anyone else, if there's a piece that you'd like to jump in around this outdoor recreation space, I'd love to invite you to jump into the conversation.
I'd love to make a comment, and it touches on one, if not at least two, of your points. So I moved to Toronto a little over a year ago, and right in the height of the pandemic. And down in a trendy part of the city, Trinity Bellwoods, there's a park there called Trinity Bellwoods. And during the height of COVID, and it's all condos around there, and there's very little outdoor space other than that park and a few other amenities. And the park was actually overwhelmed with mostly youngish people, millennials. And then after the province opened up, it went back to normal, meaning it's not that it wasn't busy, but it was, let's say, at 10 or 20% capacity. So I'm just curious, Will, in terms of like spaces and trends and whatnot, what are your observations about kind of that example that I'm giving you, but maybe other examples that relate to that? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Of course. Great question, Dan. Thank you. I think some of the examples that we've seen in BC here, I'll speak on a couple, is the enhancement of public spaces. So whether we're talking about our parks, our outdoor our plazas. And, you know, this really comes to the tourism industry, because, you know, the tourism sector is not just the hotels that we normally think of. You know, we look at restaurants, hotels, bike rentals. There's a variety of businesses that all fall under the tourism sector, tour companies, everything there. So there are some examples that I'm familiar with. There are programs to allow businesses to expand their services outdoors, temporary patio spaces, street closures, and additional signage, where in the past, pre-COVID, businesses hadn't been allowed to promote themselves. So whether it's, you know, a tourism business in a different part of town, you have lots of locals gathering at the public plaza, and cities that I found have been more open to at no cost allow those tourism businesses to promote their services, both online as well as in these public spaces, as well as have the mobile tourism services that in the past had been out at large festivals and events and large functions go to those local spots, those local parks that are really attracting the visitor in your own town, and provide those safety tips as well as the be a tourist in your own town information for what businesses are open, what restaurants you can order from, and the COVID information that people need to be up to date.
Does that answer your question, Dan? Does that sort of answer your
question? Yeah, I think that's great. We'd love to hear other questions or building on what Will wants to chat about. Over to one of you guys.
Well, Will, when we talk about sort of leveraging outdoor spaces more and giving a little bit more leverage to the storekeepers, or I shouldn't say storekeepers, excuse me, the tourism-based businesses, I'm curious to know what your thoughts are on, is this permanent? And here's why I ask. You know, a lot of times in main streets or small towns or in communities, we make concessions based on, you know, what's happening at the time. And, you know, with tourism, there were all these sort of bylaws in place, or all these sort of policies in place that said, for example, signage could only be this way, you could only sort of advertise this far up the storefront. In here in Canada, we have the Ministry of Transportation, where if you're on a major route, right, there are limitations on what signs you can put. So my question to you is this, Will, based on your experience in tourism overall, we've seen ups and downs, perhaps nothing like COVID. Do you think the changes we're seeing now are indicative of a consumer change? Are we going to continue to see these changes, or are we going to retract because we'll just put our hands up and say, COVID's done, let's go back to normal?
Great question, Bob. I think that COVID has allowed both government and the private sector to be more open for these changes, to respond quicker, and to have these pilot projects go into effect during COVID, and people are loving it. So, you know, you're seeing street closures, you're seeing, you know, expanded time for city parking in the downtown core around supporting the shop locals, shop local programs, and I think we will see quite a few of these programs continue forward. I know that quite a bit of funding has been allocated to support the local tourism businesses, and you know, a lot of planning has gone into place for some of these overall regional or city plans. So I wouldn't be surprised at all if lots of these programs continue forward. Maybe they're tweaked as we adjust. But lots of, you know, the temporary patio spaces, you see community after community expand into the parklets and have more green space in the downtown because people want to be outside. So to answer your question, Bob, yeah. I see these continuing forward.
I wouldn't mind chiming in a little bit, and I'd be curious for anybody else. So I don't want to be a downer, because I do agree with what you're saying, Will. Like, I know in Ontario, and I probably shouldn't say this, I'm not sure I trust the provincial government on things like patios and streets. We haven't had the best track record. Like, Montreal, New York City, these places have been really great at opening up streets, making them more pedestrian. In Ontario, I think there's been a really great response with COVID. I'm not even sure how to frame the question or discussion. I mean, What do we think do we think governments will have a long-term view and see the benefit, or what can we do as community members or economic developers to make sure that that stuff happens? Because, you know, there are downsides, meaning, you know, traffic and whatnot, but I think the upsides far outweigh the downsides. I'm not sure I trust our administrators, so I put that out there. Thanks.
Hey, can I jump in for a second?
Please do.
Hey, so I came from being executive director of downtown Santa Barbara. And when I started there, there was a big hesitancy to shut down the main State Street, which is the sort of the main corridor in the downtown area. So we ran a pilot program and it was really successful, but there was still hesitancy. So right at the start of COVID, it became necessary to shut things down to move dining and all that outside. And now the difference is night and day between perception, because it's been so popular and so successful. And it's Santa Barbara, so you sort of have a year-round use of the outside space. Now, the administration's like, we're not going back. It's definitely closing down. We need to redesign the downtown to be more pedestrian-friendly in order to accommodate and keep what we've developed here. There is sort of a hesitation that the bars and the restaurants have been very successful, whereas retail has not been as successful. And generally, you know, over, I think we all understand how retail has changed. But just how we think and how we redesign those kinds of outside pedestrian areas to be very friendly to retail, I think is sort of like the next iteration of what they're going to be discussing there.
Thank you for that contribution, Carrie. Appreciate it for sure. So I wanted to make sure we open it to the audience. I have a ton of questions, Will, but I always do this. I always hog time. So I want to make sure I do leave it open if anyone else has any questions before I jump in with some more of mine. Going once.
Wait. I'm going to be the hog. Will, you mentioned something about mobile something. It really caught my curiosity, but my retention is a bit weak. Can you refresh your memory on what you're talking about on the mobile side of tourism?
Yes, of course, Dan. Bob mentioned during the start of the conversation here, I've recently transitioned roles. So in my past role, I was the tourism and economic development manager for a smaller rural community in the BC interior. And over the last year, I've transitioned down to the Lower Mainland to work for a community, a much, much larger community. For the past 5 or so years, looking after tourism, we were able to create a mixed system of providing tourism services. So you have the traditional bricks and mortar location, online with website services, social media, everything like that. But the mobile tourism services, and this is something that I feel the community that I was with previously was well equipped for when COVID hit, because we already had that in place. So mobile tourism services, what we had, think of a food truck as source. I think we received the idea from Oklahoma, if I'm not mistaken there. And mobile tourism services, a food truck type of a trailer hauled by a city truck, or it could be a chamber truck or whatnot. You pop holes in the side, tables come down, you have TVs in the back, all of your tourism brochures, information, you have roaming tourism ambassadors, summer students that we hired, and this could go from event to event. We had this at the city parks when COVID hit to provide that information, COVID information, and for the local businesses. And it was extremely versatile. You can change it for whatever needed to occur there. So that's the mobile tourism information that I'm referring to there, Bob.
Oh, I love it. Will, thanks for sharing. That sounds awesome. Over to you, Bob.
Thank you, Will. That is definitely great knowledge. So again, wanted to throw it out there. I see our friends Lee and Jason in the audience. Just wanted to see if you guys want to join us on stage. If no one else has any questions, I've got a ton, Will. I'm so eager about this topic. Okay, I'm going to take it. I gave it to you guys. Nobody took it. Okay, so Will, here's what I want to ask you. I think I already have an idea of what the answer is, but I'm curious to get your perspective on it. So COVID comes, you know, as a business community, I'm going to use Canada as an example. As a business community, we all sort of shifted to this idea of how do we go virtual? Let's do everything virtual. So, you know, as we move into COVID recovery and returning to whatever normal might be, do you think there's still a space for virtual experiences or even hybrid experiences? So not events, but actual tourism experiences.
Thanks for the question, Bob. Of course. I think, you know, what we're seeing, whether it's for conferences, we've talked in previous Clubhouse calls that are now having that split. I think for the tourism experiences, we're still going to see that split. And I think it comes down to as well the messaging that has changed that, you know, the tourism professionals have said to both stakeholders as well as visitors throughout the whole COVID pandemic here over the last year and a half. It has been it's changed to dream now, visit later, and now it's gone to people are wanting to travel, but they're wanting to travel safely. So people are being inspired and having those experiences online, seeing places, and then wanting to go and visit them. So, being able to have that online with social media and the websites, but also having those services that have increased due to COVID for pickup for restaurants, for your food and restaurants, all of the bookings for the hotels, the technology advancements in the tourism sector has increased dramatically due to COVID because people want safe, they want quick, and they want to have those experiences.
Sorry, Bob.
Right. Go ahead, Lara. No, go ahead.
I really love what you're talking about, Will, and I've been contemplating this, and we've talked about it a lot here on Clubhouse, the digital nomad. We've talked about people being now able to work anywhere, but if there's this permanent shift in working from anywhere, and a large part of the working world dreams of being digital nomads can finally become a reality, how will this ultimately benefit or hinder business travel?
Good question. I think, it's having those conversations and seeing what all of the sectors are working together for. I think that lots of the conversations I've had regionally here and with different destination marketing organizations, with different provincial bodies, have been around. During COVID, there was a lot of time to prepare for the next step of the tourism sector. After COVID, allows more travel. And for those folks that have moved from just working in the office to more of a, nomad lifestyle, as you mentioned there, Laura, I think these products, these planning, phases, documents, strategies that have been developed will help with that and will help showcase the need for additional businesses if they're looking to start up different businesses, the niche tourism businesses that are needed to be developed, as well as what are the unique experiences that can partner together for an enhanced trip to a community, an additional night stay in a region. I think there's lots of planning that took place during this time, and that'll of course have an impact on those that are going back to the office, as well as those that have transitioned to a nomad type lifestyle. Does that answer your question there, Laura?
It does. Thank you.
And of course, if there's other folks that want to jump in to chat about this, I'd be interested to hear.
Yes, please. We definitely are. Again, I keep hogging the stage here, but definitely we see Lee and Jason in the audience. Cassandra, I know you're new to the room. Please feel free to join us on stage. Will, I want to really quick, while we're waiting for some other questions, I wanted to draw on one thing you kind of touched on, and I want to explore more of it. Based on Laura's question, is there now an opportunity for new tourism business or innovation? So, we've always looked at, as economic development professionals, how are we facilitating bringing businesses in and creating entrepreneurship. But, with everything that's happened with COVID, is this a really good time to say, I've always had this idea to start this tourism-related business, or I have this business that's not tourism related, but I can pivot to add a module of tourism components. Is this a good time for that, Will? Like, is this a good time for that type of innovation and startup?
Thanks for the question, Bob. And I might be a little bit biased. As I mentioned, I'm coming from British Columbia, Canada here. So tourism has quite a large effect on our economy here. I'll mention in my previous role, I was looking after the tourism portfolio, and all during COVID, we were working on identifying what tourism businesses we had in the community, what the niche areas for business growth are, and also connecting those businesses to see, does a new business need to start, or is there a possibility to continue to hold on to the staff that those tourism businesses have, instead of having layoffs, being able to reshift the priorities of those staff, offer additional services, because the last thing we want is for businesses to go out of business or to lay off staff. So how can we shift the model? And I think we saw quite a few businesses do that. For the government side or the supporting nonprofit side, I think setting the framework is something that we have to make sure that we're taking a role in. We're able to create a tourism asset inventory and work on some regional corridor development. So working with our municipal and regional partners to identify, here are the businesses that we have for in the tourism sector. Here's the areas of growth. There are grants available. We saw quite a few businesses pop up, whether they were catering businesses, so maybe ones that were just in a bricks and mortar location, and additional food trucks popped up, additional bike rentals. Don't get me on the bike rental side during COVID. It was extremely difficult to buy a bike or to find a bike to rent. So horseback riding, very everyone's wanting to go outside, be a little bit distanced away from people. So horseback riding was very popular. And looking at what tourism product developments, especially around the hiking, fishing, camping, all of those. So I think we saw quite a few businesses, but it's making sure that it's supporting those businesses that are existing right now, as well as attracting new ones. You have to have a mix of business retention and expansion. If it's business attraction and retention, if it's only attracting new businesses, then the core of your tourism business community, that needs to be strong. That's the primary focus.
That's a great point. The last thing we want to do as professionals is cannibalize our existing tourism businesses by constantly attracting new ones. So that totally makes sense. It's so funny you talk about bike shortage, because I was in preparation for our chat today, I was doing a little bit of nerding out on tourism, and I had read an article that had said there's a shortage across a lot of tourism assets, such as car rental. Car rental locations are really struggling to keep inventory, because I guess when COVID hit, they sold off a lot of their leases and now they can't seem to get it back. Should we be worried? Should we, when we look as economic development pros on supporting our tourism businesses, these supply chain shortages, for lack of a better word, are they bleeding into all components of tourism, though? Did I just read this one blog and that's it? What are your thoughts on that?
Great question, Bob. I think being very cautious of what's going on with the supply chain, as well as the labor force. Those are the two things when we did our business walks, talking with our tourism businesses to gain an understanding of what exists within our community, as well as working with our regional partners. Those were the two things that were identified of the supply chain of how products are coming in, what's available, but also the labor side. Those were identified as two primary things. So as economic development professionals, tourism professionals, we need to make sure our eyes are on the ball for that one.
Yeah, I imagine workforce development is a discussion. I don't imagine. I know that in this room, we've had a number of chats around workforce development and, how do we facilitate labor in an industry that's usually seasonal? Is that fair to say, Will? Like, it's usually seasonal?
Well, I think it depends. The tourism sector is so large. It is seasonal. Lots of the summer staff, especially at the resorts and everything. But we are seeing a shift. You see ski resorts that are becoming as busy, if not busier, during the summer as their ski seasons had been. So, I think it's identifying, and for us as working with nonprofits, local governments, supporting organizations. I think it's helping build that framework and also helping to show where the niche markets are, the niche tourism businesses, but also identifying where there can be additional growth for the shoulder season. So we worked quite closely with our hotel sectors and our restaurant sectors to be able to have an understanding of where they need support. Because if you're just pouring in resources into the summer season, and of course they don't need help during that, then you're just wasting time there. So
that's a good point as well. And by the way, sorry, I'm stealing Will's time. Does anybody have any questions? I want to make sure everyone can ask if they have questions, or I'll just keep pummeling Will with so many of my questions.
Okay. Not a problem. Great questions, but open for others as well there. So.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, I'll keep going, but I'll go slower to make sure that we allow other people to ask questions. So Will, just to continue on what you were saying there, this idea of really being mindful of what does that industry look like, what trends. So have we seen a shift in where tourism is going? So as economic development grows, the trends that we know about, are these shifting? So you had said earlier, don't worry just about a season, look at shoulder seasons. What other trends have modified or changed that we should be aware of as ECDEF pros, do you think, because of what's happened over the last 19 months?
Yeah, and I think that comes down to where the tourism sector was pre-COVID and where it is right now and where it's heading. As I mentioned, I'm looking from a British Columbia focus on this, but just across Canada, looking at pre-COVID 2019, tourism made up, I think it was about $105 billion for tourism expenditures in 2019. And from the Tourism Industry Association of BC, they mentioned 1 in 10 jobs in Canada are related to tourism related jobs. So, it's a huge sector that I think is, hidden among other sectors sometimes. I think there's those frontline workers that we can always see and we associate those with the tourism sectors, but there's all sorts of entrepreneurs and different jobs that make up those 1 in 10 that are in the tourism sector there. And we saw the growth, to answer your question, Bob, we saw the growth of tourism leading up to COVID here. I think 2019 was the best recorded year for visitors and arrivals into Canada. We saw an increase at hotel stays. We saw the municipal regional district tax with the hotel tax, as it may be called in other locations, grow. And the growth of the tourism sector was growing and growing. And I think, it was the hardest, I believe it was the hardest hit for all of the sectors during COVID. And I think as well, our Indigenous owned tourism businesses were extremely hard hit in some of the rural communities. So now is the time to support those businesses and to be able to have continue that growth as we transition for things reopening. The tourism sector was growing the fastest, and it's recovering now, but we need to make sure that it continues to grow, that it's not hard hit here, because people do want to travel, and we want to make sure that the products are in place for them to travel, and they are able to book those experiences with the new technologies that have come out and the fast pace that people are used to. But continue to see that growth.
This is a perfect... Oh, Dan, please go ahead. Go ahead, and then yeah. I'll go.
Thanks, Bob. This is maybe a difficult question, and I certainly don't expect you to have all the answers on this one, Will. So we are coming out of a pandemic. There may be future versions of a pandemic in terms of human separation, all that kind of stuff. Where do you see the tourist industry going? Has there been one or two, and we may have covered already, if so, please highlight it, one or two key shifts? And if we were to look through the looking glass, right, what do we think the future of tourism looks like based on our experience with COVID? Let's pretend it goes sort of back to normal, whatever that means, but understanding that, you know, another version of COVID could happen in 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years, whatever. What are your thoughts on that?
Great question, Dan. I think we will still have some of these features that I mentioned before. So, you know, the outdoor patio spaces, the new way of booking for your hotels, for ordering food. And I think we will see more of a focus on those outdoor recreation experiences. I can't stress enough, being in a smaller rural community in the BC interior, the increase that we saw to the public outdoor spaces and the demand for tourism products, the horseback riding, the provincial parks, all of that, rentals for kayaks. So I think that will continue to grow, but it's working with the private sector. So if we are just outlining the framework of this is what the tourism sector needs to look like, needs to grow, that can't come to fruition unless we have the buy-in from other business support organizations like chambers and business improvement associations supporting our downtown, having the businesses there, as well as those outdoor recreation experiences, as well as the private businesses. So supporting those entrepreneurs that want to start up these businesses, supporting the succession planning for the businesses that are the business owners that are looking to retire, but to make sure that those businesses continue to move forward and grow. That's what I'd say the future looks like, and supporting the businesses that have struggled during COVID and want to continue to grow. That trend of the tourism industry up until 2019 growing extremely fast year over year. And I'd love other folks to jump in as well for their thoughts to Dan's question.
I don't have thoughts, but I want to continue this question, Will. So, you know, Dan's question is really relevant in terms of, you know, we're recovering from COVID. Have we learned our lessons? I want to ask sort of, in case, you know, another pandemic hits, I want to ask sort of a longer term question. When we think about the changing generational demographic, right? So the changes in how millennials and Gen Z look at tourism. When we think about the rising cost of real estate, when we think about tech and automation, potentially sort of, you know, not replacing humans, but sort of augmenting humans, for example, virtual reality. So when we think about sort of all of these changing characteristics to our landscape as a people, what does the future of tourism look like then? Should we be worried that, to your point, that if we're not facilitating future tourism businesses, we're going to see a decline in them as they success out and age out?
Great. Thanks for the question, Bob. I think it's, you know, we definitely have to provide the framework and the guidelines for what we're looking for growth. But, you know, we do have to be cautious that unless the support is there, you know, the community, just for an example, the community that I've transitioned to now provided $5 million for supporting COVID recovery initiatives. And those were towards locals, tourism businesses, and supporting some of these initiatives that I mentioned before about having an additional 30 minutes of free parking downtown to support those restaurants, those, you know, retail businesses, and providing additional services for waived fees for patios. So, you know, that definitely helps, but it's also listening and being aware of what the tourism businesses are wanting to shift to. You talk to so many tourism businesses now, and the last year and a half has just been a whirlwind of the changes of the different programs, the different messagings that they have heard. And I think as tourism professionals, we need to make sure that, you know, we're at the forefront of leading that messaging and sharing that with our stakeholders. And, you know, the tourism businesses, they've gone through a lot, as I mentioned, and they're wanting to move forward, but also be supported with those continued resources as they continue forward for growth. And I have no doubt that in BC here, the, you know, stats that we saw leading up to 2019 and across Canada, we will get to those numbers again, but there needs to be assistance from the local government, from federal government, province, as well as supporting organizations with the businesses working together.
Bob, if it's okay, I'd like to look out even a little bit further. You know, we talked a lot about the pandemic and the effects on tourism, which is awesome, but I'd really like to look a little bit even further out and talk about climate change and how will climate change begin to affect the tourism industry. Things like, you know, carbon offsets and I think having come from Utah about skiing and how skiing could potentially change. So I'm just kind of curious on your thoughts on how climate change may ultimately affect the tourism industry.
Awesome. Laura, I was wondering before we jump into the conversation on this, was there particular examples that you might be able to share with the group here around some tourism businesses or sectors, you mentioned skiing, that have moved forward and transitioned due to climate change for some of their business models or the services they provide? It would be excellent to have a conversation around some of those discussions and talk about that here today.
Yeah, well, one of the things that I can think of is having worked for Salt Lake City, one of the requirements is if we were going to do plane travel as a department, we had to show how we were offsetting the carbon that we were creating by taking that air trip. And I'm wondering if companies and the tourism industry is going to start thinking in sort of the same manner as a local government, for example.
Interesting. Yeah, I like that idea. And I know around the table here, when we're having provincial meetings, lots of our travel businesses and the travel sector is well represented. So, you know, having those conversations to see what some of those changes need to be. I think as well, you mentioned travel. The one that I think of right away is with climate change, the agritourism side. So looking at, the farm to table, farmer's market, and being so aware that the agricultural side is so dependent on what happens with climate change. And that makes up a large portion of the tourism businesses. So it's quite interesting to look at whether we're talking about the ski industry, agritourism, the travel industry. Welcome other input from the group here today. If other folks have examples, how climate change is affecting the tourism economy.
It's one of the things that I also noticed was, you know, obviously with people not using their vehicles as much at the height of the pandemic, when we were all, you know, quarantined, there was a decline in some of the urban smog that some larger cities have. So I'm curious if our local governments and consumers are going to start to change their attitude towards climate? Or do you think people will just go back to sort of normal, quote unquote, post-pandemic?
Is the question, Laura, did we learn anything? Is that that's the main question, I think.
Yes, you said...
I think that's a great question, Will. So, you know, to Laura's point, I'll let Laura's point sit as it stands. What are your thoughts, Will?
Excellent. Well, before I jump in, I just saw that Tina joined us on stage here. And Tina, did you want to speak on this point here?
Yeah, thanks, Will. Tina. Just kind of jumping in here. I'm talking to you all from St. Petersburg, Florida. So I'm on the Gulf Coast of Florida, where the past couple of years There has been an ebb and flow of red tide. So there's definitely some considerations there. And then, you know, just to give you another point of reference, we're working with a client in New Orleans. So we can go back through to Katrina in 2005, to Ida that really caused some issues. They've got a definite infrastructure problem that needs to be resolved because the city of New Orleans sits below sea level. So, I mean, two points of reference from a tourism perspective. Definitely climate change is having its havoc in both communities.
And yet, Tina, it seems to me that tourism organizations don't seem to be talking about it as much as maybe they could be. And maybe I'm wrong, and I don't generally sit in a tourism meeting, so maybe I'm incorrect in that, but it just sort of feels like it's not a conversation that's really being brought to the forefront with DMOs.
I wouldn't disagree with that. We do work with DMOs as well as economic development in downtown. So I see them very forward and positive focused. Rather than how are we addressing it, I can tell you that my client in New Orleans is the downtown development district. So it is a very real conversation addressing infrastructure in regards to clean and safe. Definitely factors in there. But I do find that the DMO business is more about attraction more than solving some of those issues that aren't going away. And it's not a slam on the industry. I mean, their charge is to get people to visit. And I think that's an immediate as well as proactive approach, but it definitely factors in. And we can tell that if you look at those organizations across the country, they were in no way, shape or form ready for the pandemic and have very different looking organizations at this point, a year and a half in to the pandemic.
Very interesting. Thank you. And Bob, can I ask one more question?
Yes, please.
And then, this one is really economic development heavy. So, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot regarding how office is changing and investors. So my question is, will large investors continue to buy hotel real estate? Do you think that this will accelerate a trend toward more institutional investors where, you know, they come in and sort of swoop in finding a more cost-effective opportunity? Or do you think it's going to go back toward a more mom-and-pop ownership versus, you know, large investors who have kind of been burned by this asset class?
Great question, Laura. Maybe I can jump in, and then I definitely invite other folks on the call here to jump in as well. I think it really depends on the location. You know, in the Okanagan, there's quite a mix. There's a large percentage of mom and pop hotels, but I've worked with and talked with communities that are really focusing on hotel attraction because there isn't the current spaces. Their communities are growing and they're having an increase of sports tourism. And we could have a whole conversation on Clubhouse around sports tourism and what do you need in your community to support that. One of the things is having the hotel space. So there's a variety of communities that I've spoken with that are excellent venues for whether they're festivals to come in or they're sporting events to come in, but without the hotel space, without that accommodation sector there, then they're losing out on attracting those large sporting events or festival events. So whether it's downtown city center planning to attract those huge hotels that are coming in to support the metro region, or it's attracting those smaller hotels, but ones that can support the summer tourism season or the winter ski season, as well as those growing shoulder seasons.
Can I chime in too? Laura, did you want to say something else first?
No, that was really helpful. Thanks, Will.
Yeah, I agree with Will. And then I also think it depends on the location and the situation, right? Not unlike many things in business. So I have a client right now that is, you know, like on the verge of the next level of growth. And I definitely, in this case, it would be institutional investors doing significant investment. But I'm not sure that whatever the trend has been and whatever the split has been, that that will change dramatically. I think different levels of investors have different risk tolerance, different perceptions, and I think it'll more or less stay the same. But that's my two cents. I'm Dan, and I'm done speaking.
Wonderful. Thank you, Dan. Thank you, Laura, for such great questions. We are at 12:56, so I just want to make sure that we have some time, Laura, to talk about tomorrow's session before we hand it back over to Will to talk about some final topics.
Absolutely. And tomorrow we're going to talk technology and VRE. So you won't want to miss that conversation. We'll have Asa Khan joining us, who's an expert in this area. And we're excited to have him share what he's foreseeing in terms of technology and VRE. And then on Thursday, because it is Canadian, what is it? The Canadian Association of Economic Developers is having their conference this week. So we will have a session on Thursday where we're going to talk about small towns, big opportunities. And of course, last but not least, on Friday, we're going to talk about government programs and participation. So how to work together with our local governments. Should be another great conversation. So as always, we'll be at noon Eastern time on Wednesday and Thursday this week, and Friday at 3 p.m. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Laura. This is great. Will, this has been an amazing topic. I want to end on a maybe more of a summary question. It might be a bit of a heavy question because I think we've heard a lot of amazing things here today to take with us, Will. But I'd love for us to end the call to really talk about, as economic development pros, and you've mentioned these things, so this is really a summary question. You know, what are sort of the top 3 to 5 things that we should be doing actively on a monthly basis to support tourism? So you had mentioned, obviously, creating an asset portfolio. You had mentioned, obviously, you know, working with other levels of government to ensure that there's some funding levels. I want to make sure I didn't miss anything. So, Will, can we just find, like, as a summary list, 3 to 5 things that ECDEF Pro should be doing to really support tourism within their community?
Yes, of course. Thank you for the question, Bob. And, you know, the hour just flies by. So if folks on the call here or folks that are listening to the podcast afterwards want to reach out, feel free to connect on LinkedIn. We have the ECDEV Network on LinkedIn. And you can also reach out directly to me, Will George, on LinkedIn. I love to share different examples, case studies, everything like that, and to connect afterwards. I think the few things to leave you with of what we need to do to support the tourism sector and those businesses. Number one, talk to the businesses. You have to know what is going on. Are they looking to move into a succession plan for their business? Are they looking to grow? Are they having labor shortages? Talk with those businesses. The second one, after talking with the businesses, would be to create a tourism asset inventory. So to identify what is available in the community, what is in your region, how can those businesses work together, partnerships. The third one being working with additional stakeholders. So to be able to share that information for different grant opportunities, the COVID messaging, making sure that continues to be delivered to stakeholders as well as visitors, and then identify new opportunities for growth. So it's all about partnerships and tourism. You know, people come to our communities to have a excellent experience, and we're here to extend the length of their stay and to enhance the visitor experience, whether it's through the businesses that we have, the visitor services, whether bricks and mortar or mobile that we talked about today. So those are the things that I would leave everyone with, and please to connect afterwards. And thank you very much for hosting a great conversation on tourism recovery today.
Will, thank you so much for the amazing knowledge. We really appreciate your time and effort in answering the rapid fire questions that I posed to you. So thanks for your patience on that. And of course, those listening on the podcast, you know, Will sort of shared his information if you want to continue to sort of reach out to him, or you can join our ECDev LinkedIn community as well. With that, it is 1 o'clock, top of the hour. I want to ensure that everyone has time to get back to their offices if they need to. Thank you all for attending. We'll see you all tomorrow, 12 noon Eastern, right here. Enjoy your day, everybody.
Bye, guys.
Have a good day.
Awesome chat. Bye-bye.